Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Howdy, hour number three on the show. Thursday here around the country, Tiki and Tierney. And we're coming to you from our studios here as we get ready to get into the Bengals, of course. Lots happening. And the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios, where we're at. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can. No other way around it. Not must win, but all sorts of pressure. The pressure is palpable. It is increasingly amplified out there in the great city of Cleveland with this Browns team that looks as if they are no closer to getting it right than they were when they sleptwalked their way to this horrendous season last year with a head coach that was overmatched and a roster that underachieved. They come out, they put up 6 points, six. I don't care who you're playing. With that firepower, ghastly performance, 6 points. Baker was bad. Maybe the only other quarterback or two, maybe Darnold was worse, maybe Phillip Rivers. I mean, not many were worse than Baker. He was bad. And all of a sudden, Teague, you've got the Battle of Ohio, and yeah, you've got a little extra wiggle room because of the extra wild card here, but with this team and the amount of attention that it receives when it does poorly based on the expectations, you got to find a way to win the game tonight. You got to win, and you got to play well.
You're talking about if you're the
Browns.
The Browns, there's no doubt about it. It's interesting here because you have a battle of the first number one overall picks, which is pretty cool to think about in Cincinnati. And it doesn't say much about either of these teams, obviously, if you have first overall picks the last few years and you have quarterbacks. But it's telling because they're two teams that have been at times, or at least the Bengals were at times really good in the regular season, had their postseason failures. In the Browns, they just have never been able to find the right combination of executive, head coach, leader, team leader, whoever it may be, to make them a viable winner. And they seemingly have it all right now, but it's not translating onto the football field. And a lot of that is on Baker Mayfield. Now, I love his attitude, Baker Mayfield. I love what they've surrounded him with, but he's got to get, we talked about this on Monday.
But what do you mean you love his attitude? What does that mean?
Because he's confident. Like, he's always been confident. I don't think that's waned because of the lack of success in his second and third year. In fact, I did that week 14 game with the Browns and the Bengals last year, and we talked to Baker Mayfield in the pre-interview, right?
Yeah.
He still had that confidence. Like, same confidence that we had when we talked to him when he was getting ready to get drafted. Remember Minnesota? Like that same he still had, right? And so I love that about him. But what he's got to figure out is how not to think. We talked about this on Monday, BT. He's thinking too much. And I talked about his footwork and his dropbacks, how you could see him like trying to jump into position to get his steps right and then deliver the ball. It's too much thinking. You also see it in who he targets. He targeted Odell Beckham Jr. 10 times in this game. He had 3 catches, Odell Beckham Jr. So what that tells me is that somewhere in this game plan, whether it's Stefanski or Alex Van Pelt, the offensive coordinator, they're saying, let's get the ball to Odell. Let's get it to our playmaker. even if it's at the detriment of having a successful play, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And well, we've talked about that before.
BT, that's the same thing that was going on in New York.
Yeah, that's right.
Right? We talked about it with Eli. Yeah. When Eli was throwing it to everybody else, he had a pretty good completion percentage. When he was forcing it down to Odell, it was a 50-something percent and, you know, interception after interception. So it's the curse of having so much talent, and especially an explosive talent like Odell Beckham Jr. is.
Yeah, I mean, even last year, his year with the Browns, let me get his exact number. I guess the numbers are somewhat irrelevant, but I am just a little curious. What do you have, three or four touchdowns, I want to say? Hold on.
Who, Odell?
Yeah, I think it was three or four last year. He had, he had four. Okay. Yeah. You know, and I look at it, it's like, got played 16 games.
Mm-hmm.
And if you remember, you know, if it wasn't, granted, I'm sure you can do this with a lot of players, extrapolate a play here or a play there against a bad team or a breakdown and their stats get padded. I hear you. But there was a complete miscommunication when they played the Jets and he took 90 yards to the house on a little slant. Nobody was even in the vicinity.
That's right.
And I'm not going to say if you take that away, because that's ridiculous, because it was important they won the game and it was almost a 100-yard play.
Yeah.
But if you did, 89 yards, if you did take it away, you know, the numbers, below 1,000 yards, three touchdowns, you know, low 70s amount of catches here. Mm-hmm. Talking about Beckham. And, you know, I saw something today, and this is weird. This is very – I think that this is weird. I want to get into something that he said to Uninterrupted. He was doing a conversation with Maverick Carter, or he had a conversation with Maverick Carter. And he says – there's a quote. It was crazy to say, in the weirdest way, it was the first time I had ever felt in such a peaceful place. The quarantine, for me, as funny as this sounds, was probably the best thing that ever happened to me.
That's interesting.
Okay, then he goes on. And, you know, some people have used it to either read, to recommit themselves to a new hobby. Maybe you learn how to garden. Maybe you reconnect with your kids. Maybe you lose weight. A lot of people have taken the pandemic and the time, you know, isolated within the home to maybe rethink things. So I can actually, I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
This is where I think it's a little weird. He says, the fact that they had taken football out of the equation for me, I just felt like it was a weight that was lifted off. Like I'm just chilling, getting my mind, getting my body, getting my soul right. All right. There's an off season. You're a young guy. You seem to enjoy it. What do you mean that this weight that was, what do you mean?
Yeah.
You're like, he's happy that there was no football. It was taken away from him. What are you talking about?
It's an interesting
nonsense,
quote. But it also takes you into the mind of Odell and think about the expectations that have been laid in front of him since those early years where he was headed towards the stratosphere with the New York Giants. Some of the big time plays and moments that were not only memeable, but like legitimately great, right? He was headed somewhere that was stratospheric in NFL history. You know, forget with just the Giants or, you know, this millennial generation. It was historic where he was going. But what came along with that was this other expectation that had to do with football, but was actually outside of the game. And this was this persona that he put on. And I mean, I'm not a psychologist or whatever it is. I'm not trying to like interpret his mindset, but you would.
But
see,
you will.
But I'll just, about to. I just kind of see it. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, no, I see it too.
Like,
go ahead.
He's out and he's doing really interesting things, and he's becoming, you know, this icon that's a football player, but it's actually separate from him being a football player, this iconic.
What is he doing?
It's these fashion shoots. It's these, you know, these trips to Europe and Paris and the people that he's hanging out with, the Anna Wintours. It's a different world. It's a world that most people, they look at in glossy magazines. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
I got you.
And so you got to follow me here. And not only is he trying to be this great football player, he's also in this separate world trying to be this icon that's irrelevant to football. It's dependent upon him being a football player, but it's irrelevant to football, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think what he's saying is that once the quarantine or the coronavirus hit and he's forced to just be Odell without, one, the pressures of being a football player, and two, the pressures of having to be this iconic person. It freed him. It just made him let him be him. Mm-hmm. And again, he's still young. He's only 27 years old.
28.
You know what I mean? It's not like he's 33 and been around for a long time.
No,
and
but he's 28 with an injury history for a speed position.
I'm not even talking about him as a football player. That's not even what I'm talking about.
I got you.
All right. Yes, that is all valid. He's had. I mean, it's been that last 3 years, mm-hmm. right? And then last year he played the whole year, but he had
leg issues too.
Yeah, he had a groin injury all of last year. The year before that, he was the foot.
The hamstring.
It's been over and over again. But I'm not even talking about that.
Okay.
I don't want to say this because I don't know this.
Go ahead.
But is there peace in his mind? Like, is there a peace?
Is he who he is as this
great, potentially great football player,
yeah.
or is he trying to be so much for so many people that it paralyzes everything? If that makes sense. That's how I read it from the outside.
It makes complete sense. But here's what he better figure out fast. Without performance on the football field,
yes.
that other stuff is going to dry up soon.
No, of course.
I mean,
course.
You get the invites to Paris and the chartered planes and the models and the mm-hmm. runways because you're a superstar on Sundays, or you were a superstar. Now, I'm not saying that you can't run with an interesting crowd, and he's got some money in the bank, so I'm sure if he's wise with his invest, if he doesn't make another penny, if he's wise, yeah. he's got big money from Nike.
He's got a lot of money.
That's true. So, and he's a smart guy with that stuff, and I think he's a good young man.
No doubt.
He does seem conflicted with a lot. I don't know that he loves football. It's almost like, I almost get the sense, and it's weird because it's not like he had that much success.
Yeah.
It almost feels like the child actor who's like...
It's an interesting analogy.
You know what I'm saying? who's like pushed to every audition
and
they're gung-ho about it and they love it. And then all of a sudden that evaporates and they're mm-hmm. still getting shoved into these auditions.
Yeah. And all they really want to do is shrink into the corner and sit in the cut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they don't want to do it. They're already so deep into that space that they either don't have the awareness, or maybe he's just a yes guy. Maybe the thing that really plagues Odell Beckham Jr. is that he doesn't like saying no to people.
Maybe.
Which is very important at that state. When you're at that level, you better know how to say no.
Yeah.
You better be able to say no. And forget about him for a second. No, I'm not going out tonight. No, I'm not drinking tonight. No, I'm not smoking this tonight. No, I'm not doing this tonight. I've got things to do. I can't. I love you. No, I'll see you next week.
Yeah.
I'll see you when the season's over.
That's right.
I mean, I don't know if he doesn't say no enough. I don't know if he's just a people pleaser. I don't know if he truly loves football. I don't know if it's more being enamored with the celebrity status that comes with being a football player. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I do know... is that he's not the same player.
Yeah, he is.
That much I know.
He is one of the, I don't know, most complex players that we've seen. And, we bring up that catch. Remember that catch against
the Dallas Cowboys, one hand?
It's like, there's no way he came down with that. Not only did he come down with it was a touchdown, right? But it became like a meme and synonymous with him. Like my kids at the time were, I don't know, AJ was 14 or something, whatever it was, maybe even younger than that,
because
it was 6 years ago.
He
was
probably 12,
right? He's like 11 or 12, and now all of a sudden he wants to catch everything with one hand. I'm like, AJ, first of all, your hands aren't that big. You can't do that. You don't have those sticky, cheating gloves that these guys wear these days. Like, stop trying to catch a football with one hand.
Uh-huh.
And now he does it with two, and he's actually turned into a pretty good wide receiver. But it became like that's – I don't know. It was bigger than him, almost, the catch, right?
Yeah.
And he kind of grew because we saw that over and over and over and over and over. We still see it, right? This amazing catch that he made. But it doesn't necessarily – it shouldn't define his career. But in some ways, it kind of is.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Let me correct you a little bit. When you say that he, became a meme and he became a victim of the catch in essence, and I've heard other people theorize that.
Yeah.
This is where I have to correct him. He allowed that to happen, and he perpetuated that. I'll tell you why.
Yeah, but if you're 23 years old, how do you not?
Hey, Teague, I'm not saying I'm not going to use it to my advantage, whether it's getting into the club, whether it's going out with this model. I mean, I'm not saying I'm not going to use it. I'm not saying that. I have no problem. Go for it, Odell. Monetize that catch by all means.
Yeah, toss that number over here. I got it.
Just text it to my person. They'll get it to me. But here's the real problem. What he did was he allowed it to become this alter ego where, and this was his fault, not SportsCenter for running.
It's interesting.
What was he doing before every game? Coming out, the cutoff shirts, catching everything with one hand. You know why? Because he fell in love with it. And then he used that to increase his platforms and the Instagram, and everything was built off of that. And he got away from the essence of being a football player. So I'm sorry. When people use this as a crutch, I've heard it a million times. Oh, God, you know, maybe if he never hold in that pass with one hand against Dallas, you know, he really a victim of the greatness of that catch. He became a victim. He became a meme.
It's interesting.
Nonsense. He allowed it to.
It's interesting, though. It's interesting. Yeah, because you're right.
He encouraged it to.
Of course. Because how can you
one
not?
Hand and, come on.
Because he's good at it.
He drops a lot of balls. For somebody who's so good, drops a lot of balls.
Yeah, 30% catch percentage after week one. Now, granted, that's not all his
fault.
I
mean, you know.
Yeah. It's mostly Baker, but still. Maybe.
He let that happen. He could have controlled that. I know you're not all, trust me, especially on social media, you are very rarely in control of your own narrative pertaining to certain things. But he went out there and he looked at the practice field as a runway.
Yeah.
Really, as if he was coming out and it's time to strut the shoes and the suit and the ties and the hair and whatever else he's, you know, showboating with out there, instead of going out there, putting in his pregame work and getting ready to win for the Giants in a little bit more of an anonymous manner. He brought this all on himself.
Yeah, he did.
I feel sorry for him.
Yeah, I want to, well.
I don't think he's a bad, I think he's a good kid.
Well, that's why
I
feel sorry is the wrong word to use, but I want to see him be successful because he is a really good guy.
Yeah, you know, he's a good guy.
Anytime I've had conversations with him, I enjoy being around him. And I think people that are his teammates, they feel the same way.
Yeah.
But there's an expectation that just it won't like dampen down. That expectation from that year that happened with the Giants is following him. And so no matter when we see him, this is what we expect. And so when we see anything less than that, we something has to be wrong. And so we're trying to find what's wrong. It might be nothing. It might just be this is what he's evolved into. Or this is the station that he finds himself in because he got traded to the Cleveland Browns.
He also didn't do himself any favors when right after he got the contract, which he deserved. I think it was Josina Anderson. I think I could be wrong, but I know it was on ESPN.
Yeah.
Goes on, kind of, you know, rips up Eli, you know, very unprofessional toward the Giants. It was just showing cards that the public should never see.
Yep.
I feel that he's conflicted with whatever, being a star, being whatever it is. But I do agree. You can tell when he does interviews, you could look, this isn't always accurate, but generally the eyes are the window to the soul.
Mm-hmm.
And the eye, you know, you could tell that there's empathy, that there's humor, that there's compassion, there's a depth there. Like when he does an interview, he really talks and he brings you in.
Yes, right.
And that's a good thing. But maybe he's got to stop bringing people in. Maybe he's got to put up some boundaries, put some walls up. Otherwise, this thing evaporates, you know.
Yeah.
You're not a football star forever.
He's got to get hard and be a football player, which is hard to do if that's not really in your soul, you know.
Yes. And to wrap it up, it better start tonight because if you lose the Battle of Ohio, and I think they win tonight, I think they play well.
I do too.
I think they cover. I think they play all right. I think they kind of stifle the detractors for a week. Next week it's Washington, which is going to be a lot tougher than people thought. But if you lose tonight and now you're playing a Ron Rivera defense and your defense doesn't get right tonight.
Yep.
And you got to face those seven big horses, former first round picks and Ron Rivera. Yo, it's going to be messy with the Browns quick.
Yep.
And we'll see. All right. Let's get the update from ACK. All right. See what's going on with that. We've got George Karl coming up next, which will be sweet. Can't wait for it. Got George Karl. And get a sense of the Nuggets. I mean, come on, the Nuggets are playing the Lakers. So one of their great coaches, George Karl, joins us next after ACK. In about 15 minutes or so, we got ACK coming up. Disa, how was that? I don't know why I thought it was 5:30. I'm teasing the update. It's not even here. George Karl. George joins us next. And then we'll have ACK at some point after that. Tiki and Tierney. What a clown. CBS Sports Radio. All right, CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line here on Tiki and Tierney's 1-855-212-4227. That is 855-212-4CBS, brought to you by Geico. Right now, Geico offers an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies. That's on top of what Geico could already save you. So What are you waiting for? Visit geico.com to learn a little bit more. Got the Blast coming up. Got the Celtics and the Heat tonight. We've got week two, Battle of Ohio, Browns and the Bengals. And right now, T, we got a chance to chat with somebody who won a whole lot of games for multiple organizations. Of course, was great with Seattle, won the West back in the day, lost in the finals to MJ and the Bulls in 95-96. Had a good stint with the Bucks as well, Ray Allen and that crew. And 9 years in Denver, won over 60% of his games. Of course, Carmelo and Chauncey, some other ones. And it's George Karl. Had the Nuggets get to the Western Conference Finals. Coach, how you doing, man? What's happening?
It's a good day in Denver. Everybody's excited about a good young team that seems like they're growing up right in front of us.
Yeah. Do you live in Denver? Where are you at right now, Coach?
I live in Denver.
You do? So, I mean, it's so – I mean, you take it any way you could get it, clearly, but it's got to be, you know, for a franchise that doesn't have this kind of success regularly, it's got to be a little bittersweet that, you know, there aren't 20,000 people at the Pepsi Center every other game seeing this, you know?
Well, I think we're all trying to figure out, you know, playing playoff basketball without the home court advantage, and we've had so many great performances. You know, if Jamal Murray gets 50 points in the Pepsi Center, you're going to remember that night for 10, 20, 30 years.
Yeah.
The guys that sat and watched that game were always excited, you know. Yeah, and I just know that the city of Denver right now, though, is really happy and confident, and the Lakers are a challenge, but the Clippers were a challenge. So
yeah,
you know, they're hoping for a similar outcome.
Yeah, you know, Coach, you mentioned the lack of a home court advantage, and we know how this all played down with the Clippers. They were up 3-1. They had closeout games and really three straight games, and it didn't happen. Can you chalk that up to a lack of home court advantage? Or if not, how do you explain the ineptitude, really, in the second halves of game 6 and 7 of the Clippers? It seems like they're too good to have let that happen. How did it happen?
The way I kind of feel, again, I'm not in the bubble, and I don't know how stressful it is. But what I see is when a team starts playing well, and I say this because you look at Miami. Miami was the best team in the bubble in the games before the playoffs, and they're sustaining their momentum now. They swept Indiana, they won the first game of the second round, and I think Miami and Denver are the two teams probably playing as well as anybody. Now, Boston and the Lakers probably have more talent. But this time of the year, you know, team will beat talent a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, championships are won because you're connected, you're disciplined, you're focused, and you play with intensity. And the bubble probably doesn't give you the same effect of doing that when you're at home. So when momentum gets going on a positive wave, I have a feeling it lasts longer in the bubble.
Yeah.
Because if you go on the road, you're playing well and you go on the road, you know, the momentum can be turned right around against you really quickly.
Yep. We're talking to George Karl.
I think the bubble and how the bubble was performing in the bubble and sustaining it, I think it's a hell of a lot different than in a regular playoff series. But everybody's playing by the same rules. So tip your hat to Miami, tip your hat to Denver. The Clippers didn't figure it out. The Clippers looked like they disconnected as the series went on. At the end of Game 7, they looked like they wanted to get back to California so fast they were leaving before the game was over.
And you know what? And I don't disagree, George.
Yeah.
But, you know, I got to be honest. I know the coaches protect their brethren here, but I gotta leave a lot of that at the doorstep of Doc Rivers. When you have 3-1 collapses with multiple teams, I'm not saying it's all his fault here, but I do believe the Clippers are probably in need of a new voice. Would you agree with that?
I would call that being an overreaction to a crazy year. Now, the people in their organization know a lot more than we know.
Yeah.
But to fire a good coach that's won a championship, that knows how to communicate with today's players, who has a great coaching staff, to overreact and fire him and change the voice. When we, 2020, all of us are going to remember as, what the hell's going on? and I would just say, and don't get me wrong, coaches get fired for a lot lesser than losing down 3-1. And, you know, and that might happen, but I could not sign off on that, no.
Okay. What would you do, George? It looks as if, listen, Kawhi's going to be fine. He had a rough game 7. It happens. He's a great player. Paul George is a guy who seemingly has lost a lot of confidence. Now, he was never quite at that level of Kawhi or a top 5 player, but, you know, he was maybe 9 or 10 just on the outside. He was a borderline great player for a couple of years. He's losing his way. As a coach, how do you intervene and try to get him back to where he was? Because he's going in the wrong direction quick.
Well, my belief, the Clippers played all year long without a point guard. And anybody that has a great scorer and a very talented player, a thing that will help him is a point guard. Hmm. And I'm not saying you got to play a point guard to come in and take 35 minutes. But they played too many minutes in my mind without a guy thinking the game all the time for him. And when that happened, Kawhi and Paul George and Lou Williams got really individualistic. They got really isolated, oriented. Give me the ball. Let me take my shot. And there was no flow. There was no rhythm. There was no unity. There was no basketball plays that had two and three players pass the ball to each other with like they liked each other. At the end of the game there, the Clippers looked like they didn't like each other.
Yeah.
So their connection's got to be rebuilt. And the best way I would recommend from what I saw in the playoffs is the Clippers need a point guard that can play maybe some games might play 20, other games might play 30. It depends on the circumstance. So go out and get a guy that is kind of the quarterback, kind of the guy that thinks like a coach on the court.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting thought. I wouldn't have thought of it that way because we look at the superstars and we just expect them to put their heads down and get it done. But when you have a good team that you're playing against, and let's not count Denver out, they've been good for a couple of years now, you have to give them credit. Now, they do have a point guard in Jamal Murray, and they have a big man in Nikola Jokic who might be as adept at passing as any big man as that we've seen. How do you evaluate him as a passer? They use him in the pick and roll, and he's not always looking to roll the basket. He's looking to find the open shooter, and he does it. Is he one of the best you've ever seen? I know BT loves him. I love him too. But how do you see him?
There's no question that Jokic is the best passing big man ever to play this game. Hmm. I mean, Sabonis was good. Vlade Divac was good.
Bill Walton.
You know, Bill Walton was really good.
Hakeem.
This guy is special. Yep. This guy plays like a point guard. And I said in the Denver Clippers series, the only point guard playing right now is Jokic. I mean, Murray has point guard tendencies, but he's much more effective when he has the freedom to shoot the ball.
Yeah.
And go after points and be the first option of an offense. And I think the big advantage that the Lakers have is LeBron. You're going to have two guys that aren't point guards be the best playmakers in the back game of basketball right now. Hmm. LeBron and Jokic. And they're going head-to-head with each other.
It's true.
And I think a big key is
true.
Which one of those two guys is going to make someone better than they play. You know, is Jokic going to make Gary Harris come back and be a good offensive player? Is Kuzma or Rondo going to help someone off their bench find three or four three-pointers, or Danny Green jumps up and has a big scoring? Because you got to win four games, and winning four games can't fall totally on your stars.
Yeah.
Somewhere along the way, you got to win one with maybe defense, win one with playing like a team, or winning one with a wild card with someone just having a hell of a night in a big game.
All right, man. But, you know, listen, by the way, that little Twitter beef that you were embroiled in, everything okay? I mean, what was happening? Carmelo's defense, you jumped in. What happened with that, George?
Well, I'm just kind of into, let's tell the truth instead of trying to spin everything.
True.
Everything settled? No beefs? All beef squashed,
yeah,
I'm guessing?
Yeah, we're all good. I mean, I'm in the podcast and Twitter a little bit. Yeah. Having fun with the game of basketball.
So you're an interesting follower. He tweets well.
It's all you can do, Coach.
Good job, George. Appreciate you, buddy. Thank you, man.
Oh, yeah. Good luck. Have fun. Have some fun.
Thank you, Coach.
Hey, listen, always. I'm going ready. Getting ready to go to dinner. I'm going to have a lot of fun at dinner. Pour myself a little scotch tea. I haven't had scotch in a while.
See, that's your fault.
That's true. That is true. That is my fault. I'm nobody to blame but myself. But I think I'm going to have one, maybe even problem. Who am I kidding? I'm going to definitely have more than one tonight. Come back and watch that. We're going to walk there. It's around the corner. Sit outside. Have maybe two nice pours. Come back and watch Baker. Speaking of coming back, let's get the update from Ack. We'll come back. We'll hit the blast. Give you a little prediction on tonight. And we'll do that after Ack's update, which is coming at you right now. Here's Rich. Busy show. Busy day. Good day. Great day to be a sports fan. Day one of the U.S. Open looks as if it's starting to wind down here. Justin Thomas, nobody's bested his 65 so far. You've got a couple of the 66s on the board. Matthew Wolf, he of the funky, like he kind of twists his hips and then he comes up and he's got a Jim Furyk loop. He smashes it, but young kid, I think Oklahoma State kid. Matthew Wolf is minus four. He's got a couple of holes to go. He might actually best Justin Thomas. So no Tiger on the first page. He stumbled late. Phil has been all over the map. Bryson's minus two. Ricky's minus two. John Rahm is minus two. Rory minus three. He's in at a 67. So we got some. Listen, it's the U.S. Open. You're going to have a good leaderboard. But that is the only names missing really would be a DJ. Koepka's out. He's hurt. But would be a DJ and maybe like a Shoufle. No, actually, Xander Shoufle's up there, minus two. Great leaderboard. So we'll see what the round two yields and into the weekend. All right, Teak, you ready for the blast? See what we got?
Yep, let's do it.
Let's go.
So many topics, so little time. We give you five stories in 5 minutes, but don't take too long or you'll suffer the buzzer. It's time for The Blast with Tiki and Tierney.
Rough weekend for kicking in the NFL. Yeah. Bad weekend, which probably led to some missed overs, I would imagine. Those extra points, usually freebies. 15 kickers missed at least one kick, and in total, they combined for 19 shanks.
Wow.
Or pushes in the first weekend. The most since 1982. Wow. What do we attribute this to?
Bad kickers? I mean, I don't know. It's a hard one to figure. I understand like the reality of offensive linemen not having live drills or quarterbacks not getting hit and being a little bit rusty because of that. But you can actually simulate what a kicker has to go through in practice. Now, you make it like it, put stakes on it. Like if you miss this kick, then you have to like run an extra whatever, the whole team. Right, so put some pressure on a kicker in practice. I can't chalk this up to anything because it doesn't make any sense to me, other than just the fact they didn't have real live game action. But that can't be the excuse.
I've got something for you, and I don't want to give these guys the ability to wiggle off the hook like a nice bass. You know, I don't want to give them that chance here. But it is a little different kicking with nobody in the stadium.
That's a good point.
You know, it's
good point. There's no energy. Yeah, the energy is different.
Just like it's probably different for these golfers, you know, going to a barren green on their approach shot or walking up to the first tee. You know, three-time U.S. Open champion Tiger Woods. Like, it's just weird. It's different. So they better react properly and get used to it. Listen, there's probably – it's really probably a few things. There wasn't bad conditions, so you can't say that. A couple of kicking situations which need to be resolved where guys are a little shaky, maybe partly with the stadiums and – you know, maybe just a little rust or whatever, but it'll probably get better, I would imagine. I don't think it's going to get worse. I think it would get a little bit better. Teak, moving on, number two. For the first time, well, a lot of historical references here. So the kicking goes back to 82. This time, this goes back to 2011. For the first time since 2011, all 32 quarterbacks who started week one are presumed to start week two. All right, are there any quarterback changes that we would make entering week two? I don't believe so.
No,
I really don't.
No.
I would think that, like, you look at the guys who played very poorly. I mean, they're, you know, top five, top six picks, yeah. So they're obviously...
Joe Burrow's not going anywhere.
No, Sam's and if Joe Burrow wasn't that bad, I didn't think Joe was that bad.
Yeah, but his completion percentage was 50-something percent. We expected him to be... I mean, he was 70 in college. Actually, I think he was higher than that in college.
Yeah.
But he's a rookie. It's his first game. He's not going anywhere. Sam's not going anywhere.
Minshew played very well. The one you got to keep an eye on, not for week two, got to keep an eye on Phillip Rivers.
Yes. Yes.
Got to keep an eye on Phil.
And he played great, other than the two interceptions and probably three. What do you think? 363 and two touchdowns?
Uh-huh.
He just had two, or maybe only one touchdown, but he had two interceptions and probably should have had three. Yeah, maybe that one. Interesting stat. I saw this going into last week. There were 10 black starting head football coach or starting quarterbacks in week one.
How many last year?
10 black. I think there was. Maybe eight or nine. I can't remember now. Teddy Bridgewater.
Teddy didn't start week one because Drew did. He came in.
So Teddy gives you one.
Kyler started right away. Yep, he started right away.
Yep,
right?
Kyler did.
Yeah, Kyler did.
Cam did also because he missed the first couple games. But it was just 10 is a lot. It's like a third of the league is
good.
Black starting quarterback.
We're past a problem. At least we're past one problem there,
that's
right?
That's right. Exactly right.
We've always said we get to.
That's why I brought it up.
We've always said we get to a point, at least pretending to race, and at least the quarterback issues, you know, when we don't have to point out how few there are, and it's just accepted, whether it's, you know,
it's exactly
17,
right.
9, or whatever. Hey, it is what it is.
That's right.
You don't react to it because things have become, you know, fair on that level. All right, despite the Big Ten announcing its return yesterday, Dylan McCaffrey, C-Mac's little bro, was going to bounce.
Mm.
Announced he was opting out of the season and also seeking a transfer.
Mm.
So why do we think that Harbaugh has had such a hard time finding his quarterback in Ann Arbor?
I think my honest answer? Go ahead.
Because he doesn't pay for it. That's my honest answer.
I mean, that's the, like, I'm being cynical but real answer. I think you're dead right.
BG. Is what it is.
But. Let's have the assumption that there's nobody's cheating in college football. Answer is he runs an old school offense.
Yeah.
These kids come out of high school playing like spread, power spread, you know, like speed spread. They do all of this like crazy high school offenses. It's starting to permeate a lot of, you know, college as well. Let's look at the Big 12. And Jim Harbaugh is, we're going to put a fullback in the game. We're going to run downhill and, you know, attack the line of scrimmage. It's not what they want to do in a sense. And they feel like they're not going to thrive in it. So that's my not cheating answer. But the real answer is exactly what BT said.
He's not 40 seconds ago.
He's not cheating.
He's not. He's not cheating. He's definitely not cheating. Marc Gasol is a free agent entering this offseason. He's rumored to want to finish his career in his native Spain.
Mm.
How should Marc Gasol's NBA career be viewed? It should be viewed as a good career.
Yeah.
Nothing more than that. Not Hall a great career, obviously.
Hall of Famer?
No, not even Hall of Famer. Yeah. Are you crazy?
I mean, so many people get into the Hall of Fame.
Marc Gasol's not getting the Hall of Fame. The only way Marc Gasol gets in, because it is encompassing international play
as
well.
That's right.
But if you're asking me, is this guy an NBA Hall of Fame? Obviously, no. He was a highly above average center for about four or five. He's a good passer, too.
Yeah.
For about four or five years, he was one of the top four or five bigs in the NBA. Tough, big, good passer, efficient, good player.
Yeah.
But I'll leave it at that.
Yeah,
good player.
I think you're right. There were some years where he was great. He felt unstoppable at moments, but it wasn't sustained long enough. If he would have had a decade of playing like that, and you know, maybe been an X factor on a couple more championship teams, maybe then you'd say, yeah, he's a Hall of Famer. But I think that's right.
All right. Number five, Dodgers, first team in baseball to wrap up a playoff spot. Doing so, they won 7-5 against the Padres last night, who had beaten them the night before. All right, so it's the eighth straight season LA is going to be in the playoffs here. Is Dave Roberts' job on the line if they don't win the World Series?
Ah, interesting.
We've talked about this before.
I'm going to say no. I don't think it is on the line, even though, I mean, they have so much young talent. And if they underperform and don't make the World Series, forget winning the World Series, if they don't make the World Series, maybe his job is on the line. But if he gets back there again and they just get beat by, let's say, the Yankees, who get healthy.
Or the Padres.
Or Padres, whoever.
To not even get there.
Just mash. Then that's another thing. I think his job, he'll be on the hot seat if he doesn't make the World Series. I don't think he'll be on the hot seat if he gets there and loses again.
I could agree with that. I'd have to see how it shakes out. You know, is there a sweep involved? That always changes things, obviously. Yep. Do you lose to a team you're supposed to beat? I'd have to see the aesthetics of an early playoff ouster. But my inclination is to say that you're probably right. And then next year, spotlight, you're sweating bullets.
Yep.
Like you're getting grilled in the police station. You're sweating. But no, I don't. I have to see it. I'll say no, ..
Yeah.
But no.
Time's up. The blast is over for another day.
All right. So the Browns, who are home, obviously, laying 6 tonight. Mm-hmm. They're favored by 6 against the young, well, at least young Joe Burrow. Bengals aren't that young. Their quarterback is. You know, I'm going to go with the Browns. I'm not going to lay a lot of wood behind it, a few bucks just to get a little sweat, have a little fun. But the one thing that I would worry about is, you know, you and everybody's told me about, you know, Baker's mechanics are wildly out of whack and this guy. How is that fixed in 5 days?
It's not going to be. They're going to have to insulate Baker. By running the football, by turning around and handing it off to two really good running backs.
They did that last week. They had 135 yards running.
I know, but they keep doing it, right? If you got to beat a D-cell squad, University of Miami, and it's different. I'm doing the Miami-Louisville game this weekend, BT. They ran the ball 56 times out of 82 plays. 56. They just kept handing it off because that was their skill. De'Aaron King, their new quarterback, is not a great, you know, accurate passer right now. And Baker is not an accurate passer right now.
Nope.
Whether it's mechanics or it's in his head, he's thinking too much. Whatever it is, do what you do well, which is run the football. It balances your offense and makes it a lot easier, I think, for a quarterback. I think the Browns win as well. Because I do think they play better than they did in week one, where they get utterly destroyed.
They can't play worse.
But the Ravens are good, and they have a good defense, and they have a great offense.
Yep,
so
that's true.
It's a different scenario.
I'll tell you what, if the Browns aren't careful, the Bengals could look good tonight. Oh, look, there's A.J. Green. Oh, look, there's Joe Mixon slicing you up a little.
Yeah.
Oh, look at this young, polished rookie quarterback. I mean, they could look good. They have weapons, as we know, so... I'm going to just put a few bucks on the Browns to stick my toe in the pool because, you know, I like to sweat on a Thursday night game. It makes it more fun. Confidence meter, 6.
Yeah.
6 that the Browns cover. Don't go too crazy.
Yeah,
I wouldn't.
I hear you, dude. Enjoy it, man. Enjoy dinner, too.
Thank you. We're going with the whole crew, the kids, and we're going to sit outside with another family and their daughter. So enjoy it, Teague. I'll see you tomorrow, buddy. Enjoy the rest of the golf. Enjoy the football tonight, the hoops tonight, and we'll see you tomorrow for a Football Friday. Safe, sensible, sane. Be well. Bye-bye.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.